All is still in the house. It is the morning after the adventure with the frightening Furby. And frightening Furby is currently in its sleeping mode on our dining room table. So I thought I should do a follow-up piece to let you know how it had ended. So with our distraught daughter in tears, sobbing herself to sleep last night because her Furby friend had become this demonic creature, we went online and we sort of Googled and searched how to return your Furby back to its more pleasant condition, its more pleasant state. And we found out how to do it, and we did the exorcism this morning. And we changed its character and changed its mood back to the way it was. And we involved our daughter in that process so that she could see how it could be done, and that she wouldn't be too afraid in future, and that she'd be able to do it herself, more importantly. But it did make me think that there's nothing on the box, there's nothing in the instructions that I saw that would indicate that your Furby could go utterly psycho on you, and in quite a terrifying way, and that if you're not expecting it as a child, it can be quite a traumatic experience. So I kind of have read a bit more about it and come to understand some of the thinking behind it, maybe. But on the other hand, a little warning on the box saying that if treated roughly, or if treated like any child is going to treat it, the Furby will go absolutely, completely and totally psycho. Would maybe have been a good idea, because you look at the box and the animal is such a, or the toy rather, is such a cuddly, friendly, loving, fun animal. There's no indication that there is a darker side. There's no indication that just under the surface lies this monster. Anyway, we've had that adventure now. We've had that adventure. But it did spark some thoughts in my mind about Christmas and Christmas presents and toys. Toys in particular. Because while the Furby is, in a way, a very clever toy, because it takes inputs and it reacts to them, it operates on a very limited number of stimuli and responses. And in a way that limits a child's interaction with it. And that got me thinking about things like Lego, because if I look at the Lego toys that my daughter has got, they're a million miles away from the Lego that we used to have ourselves when we were growing up, because you can create the most amazing things. I'm looking at, on the floor, a Jeep, a pink Jeep that she has assembled with a horse cart behind it. But anybody from my generation will, if they had built a Jeep and a horse cart from the Lego that they knew, have basically built something quite square and not really resembling very much a Jeep and a horse-drawn, a horse box to be drawn behind it. Whereas what I'm looking at here is perfection. It has panels that are completely smooth and they're painted, and the Jeep looks like a Jeep, and it has wheel arches, proper wheel arches, and wheels, and a proper smooth bonnet, and all of this, and the horse cart has curves. And really all you're doing is you're assembling a kit. You're assembling an Airfix kit, a kit that has already been determined how it should look and which piece goes where. And similar to a Furby, you treat it X, you get result Y. In this particular case, with this Lego I'm looking at, you follow the instructions to arrive at a fixed set point. The point is already determined for you. There is no adventure. There is a little bit of accomplishment of, I put the thing together the way it should have been put together, or I put the thing together the way the instructions told me to, and I got the required result. Any adult will recognise this from putting together successfully something from IKEA. But here's the thing, it takes away the imagination of the child. If you go back to the Furby has a number of inputs that it will react to, and then it will have an output. When I was growing up, we had action men and girls had dolls, and they were placid things. They were, I was going to say dead things, but that's not quite the word I want to use here. But they had neutral expressions, and they didn't do anything. If you said something to the doll, it did not talk back. You had to use your imagination to build a story with that toy and do things with that toy. Similarly, with the Lego that we had to take these nondescript blocks and bind them together in a way to create something of our own imagining, of our own imagination. Whereas these days, you follow a set of fixed instructions to build the Lego vehicle, spaceship, aeroplane, whatever, that has already been predetermined. There is no imagination required on the part of the child. All they have to do is follow the instructions. Video games seem to be the same way, don't they? You follow, for many video games, a set number of rules to achieve a set outcome, be it a shoot 'em up or what have you. And I wonder whether all of this is healthy for our children's development of their imagination. I don't know. I have no evidence that it isn't, by the way. All I can think is that given a set of square, nondescript Lego blocks and told to use their imagination to create something that is more stimulating, maybe, than given a set of very defined Lego blocks that can only be used for one purpose in a set sequence, that can't surely stimulate their imagination. Just some thoughts. A way around this, by the way, a way around this is something that my great friend Paul Omani was talking about doing. Well, I know that he does with his own daughter, and I do it with my daughter to an extent as well, and that's storytelling, creating stories together, either as a tag team or as a team developing a single story, or that one of us does a bit of the story and then the next one does the next bit and then the next one does the next bit. And he was going to write a book about this, and he had a very specific purpose, not necessarily to help develop the imagination of your child, although I think it is a really, really good way to do that. He was more interested in the bond that it creates, the relationship, and how if you do this at a young age, you're communicating with your child, you're building something with them, you're creating with them, you're building a relationship, you're validating them, you're taking their input, you're listening, and you're valuing it, and you're reacting to it, responding to it, and building on it. And all that is very healthy, so that when you arrive at the teenage phase, the phase that we all fear as parents, that you've built that relationship, and that relationship is strong, so that it's very normal for them to communicate with you. It's very normal with them to do things with you. So he was going to write a book. I'm sure I'm right in saying that. Paul, if you're listening and you were never intending to write a book, I do apologise. But for me, I love the idea of stimulating the imagination of a child and working together with them to help them use their imagination and build it and build that muscle, that creative muscle, which I think is going to be very important for our children later in life. So that maybe is a way around the narrow confines prescribed by modern toys. Anyway, just some thoughts, just some ramblings following on from our adventure with the Furby, who is mercifully still switched off on the table in front of me. Two more things for Hasbro. It would be nice if there were a genuine off switch on the Furby. If you don't know the Furby toy, you might be surprised to know that there is no on-off switch. There is no volume control either. Furby is either silent or Furby is either very, very noisy. Of course, that is an adult's perspective. When a children's toy is ever nice and quiet. Anyway, I'm rambling now. I hope you're having a great Christmas.